Hey there, teachers. I am so excited to share this episode with you today. If you didn't know, this winter we hosted our batch planning live event, and one of our incredible guest speakers was Dr. Deonna Smith. And she was so incredible that we just knew we had to get her on the podcast to share with you guys ASAP. So thankfully, she agreed to sit back down with us, and she actually recorded today's episode with Megan, who is our co-host on the podcast, and she's going to be talking all about bringing joy into your classroom experience. And I've had a chance to listen into this, and holy cow, this conversation is seriously something special. I cannot wait for you to tune in. Hi there, Caitlin here. Our mission at EB Academics is simple. Help middle school ELA teachers take back their time outside of the classroom by providing them with engaging lessons, planning frameworks, and genuine support so that you can become the best version of yourself, both inside and outside of the classroom. So if you think you might be ready to try something new because you know you simply cannot continue the way that you have been, then I'd invite you to take a moment to check out the EB Teachers Club, the EB Writing Program, or the EB Grammar Program by visiting the links in the description of the podcast. We hope to continue to support you within one of our programs in the future. And in the meantime, we look forward to serving you right here on the podcast each week.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Teaching Middle School ELA podcast. It's Megan here with you today, and I'm pumped because we have a very special guest to the podcast. Joining me is Dr. Deonna Smith. Deonna, how are you? Welcome.
Hi, Megan. I'm doing wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be tapping back in with this community.
We're super, super excited. For our listeners that don't know, Deonna was actually one of our, she was our VIP workshop speaker for this past Batch Planning Live event that happened in January. And our teachers just raved about Deonna. Yay. And your topic about bringing joy to the classroom, it was just so timely, so relevant. And so even during that presentation, I think Caitlin was like, we have to have her on the podcast. So this worked out and I'm so glad. So thanks for being here with us.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for arranging it. I love the opportunity to just talk to more audiences and spread the word about joy. And I know you guys have such an amazing social media presence and audience and great resources. So for me, it was kind of like a no-brainer to figure out ways for us to work together, because I've actually been an admirer of your work. I used to use some of the resources before when I was in a classroom teaching. So I was like, oh, this is a full circle moment.
Yes. And we love those. Yeah. And I think you're so right. Like your message and what we try to do at EB, they just seem so aligned, and it's like the stars lined up for us and here we are. So it's great. Fantastic. Well, for any of our listeners who don't know you, I would love if you could just give us some background, what you do, what you've done, all that good stuff.
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Dr. Deonna Smith, and I am a former teacher, current like teacher coach. And I started off teaching fifth grade in Oakland, California. And over my career, I've had the just huge, amazing opportunity to teach a lot of different subjects. So I worked with kindergarten. I did K-8 intervention as an interventionist, and then also worked in middle school. So I've had a lot of experiences in a lot of different places, and I absolutely love classroom teaching, but I also wanted to support more of the teachers that were around me that I felt like had just were not getting what they needed from their teacher credentialing programs. And so I transitioned into school leadership. And what I loved the most about school leadership was working with the teachers. I didn't love the fire drills and the budgeting and all of that. So I was like, how can I still be, you know, in the classroom community and work with teachers? So that's when I transitioned to being a teacher coach and got my doctorate in education along the way. And my work really focuses on building joyful and inclusive classrooms. I mean, I just have seen so many amazing teachers out there who are creating spaces of joy and inclusion where kids feel good and the teachers feel good. And I feel like it's really my calling to help amplify that work and spread those resources as widely as I can. So.
Oh, I love that. I think in our previous podcast that Caitlin and Jessica and I recorded together, I mentioned that I just feel like there is a movement happening in education right now. And I think Voices like yours are making that happen, and it's so important, and it's such good work. So thank you. Thank you for doing what you do, because it's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you
Yeah.
for having me.
Yeah. I'm going to shamelessly plug your book, actually, because I think all of our
Oh, thank
listeners will want to
you.
hear about it. Yes. So you wrote Rooted in Joy. Can you tell us a little bit about your book?
Yeah, it was a passion project. I like to say it's a love letter to all of my colleagues and my former students. It was heavily informed by my experience just being there in the day-to-day of teaching and feeling like, what did I really need in those years? What type of advice and support did I need? I wanted to build relationships, but I didn't necessarily always know what that looked like. And I had a dream of having this joyful and inclusive, equitable classroom, but I just didn't really think that I had the tools. And so this book is really trying to address that gap. And it's for, every teacher who wants to kind of reclaim that joy and that love for teaching, but who wants to do it in a way that's equitable, who like deeply believes that all of our kids deserve to have the ability to thrive, not just survive in their classrooms.
Yes.
And so I tried to create something of a toolkit for that. And throughout the book, there is, research, of course, because I did do educational research, and I do believe in staying up to date with best practices. So there's a lot of scholarly work in there, but also a lot of my own personal stories about my students that hopefully y'all will get to know and love as much as I do. And it's meant to just kind of be a companion for folks along that way. And luckily enough, I had this idea, and a publisher was like, "Cool, let's do it." And so we turned it into a book that is available, which is still, it's still crazy to me. It's available on like Target, Amazon, Barnes and Noble. And so it's such a pinch me moment to see people reading it and enjoying it. So it is a tool that I hope is going to inspire and support teachers out there.
I love that. I love that. And professional development that sounds like teachers could really get something out of, So
Right.
fantastic.
Yeah. I have been in so many meetings that could have been an email,
Oh,
and so many,
yes.
like tone deaf things or things from people that are so removed from the classroom that it doesn't feel tangible. So this was really like focusing on the teacher perspective. And I pride myself in always staying tapped into not only like who I am as a teacher, but also who I am as a student. Because I
Yeah.
think that's really powerful too. Like when we remember what it was like to be the student in the classroom, we're able to just unlock a whole different level of understanding. So
Gosh, that's so
hopefully when
true.
folks read it, that's what they'll feel.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Absolutely. Yeah. And it sounds like maybe that's kind of your story is what led you into doing this work. 'Cause you always kind of dreamed about, you said, this joyful, equitable classroom. Tell me a little bit more about what led you here.
Yeah, so and I talk about this in the book. I didn't have, I had really good teachers, like veteran trained Montessori teachers. So I had good teachers, but I also was really grappling with an education system that just was not meant for me to thrive as a neurodivergent student. I had, two undiagnosed learning differences, and just as a young Black woman in an all-white school, I was the
Oh
only kid
gosh,
of
yeah.
color. And so I had really well-meaning teachers, but they just didn't really have the tools to support me. And then as I, got more into teaching and was learning more about different teachers across the country, there was just this huge lack of joy, just this listless, lost feeling that I saw so many people experiencing. And then I saw our students, that were really struggling because of that. And I talk about this in the book, but there's one student in particular that I knew as a kindergartner, and she was just effervescent, like so bubbly, so joyful. And she was that kid that like definitely always got the, likes to socialize. Like she reminded me of myself because I was definitely like the kid, I'm sure I would have won most likely to, I don't know, I'd be on a talk show or
Salesperson or
something.
yeah, talk show.
Exactly, because I was a talker and she was too, and I just loved her, and I ended up connecting with her later as a middle schooler, and by that time her experience of the school system was so negative that all of that joy, all of that positivity had just basically been sucked out. And I feel like as someone who worked with kindergartners and middle schoolers, I just saw like what happens to
Yeah.
these joyful, like, because kinders, they love their teachers. They want to be at school. They're curious. They like to learn. They're not like what we experience later. So I was like, what would it look like to really look at what it is that is kind of sucking the joy out of our students and through extension out of our teachers, and really be on the front lines of like pushing back against that in a way that's really grounded in students and really grounded in teachers and not coming from a top-down perspective, but really being in the work with them and advocating for them. So that's kind of like, it's a lot of it is my own personal story, my own personal experiences and my students, and then hearing that affirmed and echoed, you know, as I'm working with teachers and realizing like someone and has got to start pushing this conversation, and you know, might as well be us. So we're going to do it. We're going to jump in.
And good for you for doing it. I love it. And I think it's just so cool that your background has taken you through this age range of students and you've noticed this, you know? And so I kind of wonder if you have an opinion about why do you think there's such a lack of joy in education? Like, why do you think our students, has it always been that way, or is it something that's new? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it's a couple of things like concurrently happening. So I think our education system has just become more and more outcome oriented and not process oriented. So much more focus on standardized testing, so much focus on regimenting everyone to a very narrow window of like what it means to be a student. And that has just gotten smaller and smaller and smaller because we're just trying to like copy and paste, do a checklist, crank them out. We're not really thinking about each individual child. And whereas I think before, teachers were doing that work, like behind the door, like they closed the door and they were doing that work and finding ways to subvert that. And, you know, there were some amazing teachers that were kind of pushing back on that. I think that now we're just at the point where the capacity to do that is limited. So I think that a lot of teachers who come into the field and they're ready, they're energetic, they want to, you know, they want to be the change and they have all these ideas. And I mean, it's like you pull the drain in the bathtub and all the water just runs out. And so I think, I think the demands have changed. I think we've become very process oriented and just like not really thinking about our students as they are as whole people. And so that's made it really hostile to this kind of work. I mean, when I work with school leaders and districts, I say, you know, I want to look at your teacher competencies and like your scoring rubrics, because I guarantee you there's nothing on there about joy, you know, and how are we going to tell people that we want them to have joyful classrooms if when we come in and evaluate them, all we're looking for is if the standard is on the board, like they're not going to do it because they're, you know, and so I work with people that they don't want to get in trouble. They don't want to get fired. They don't want the parents yelling at them. And so they have very real concerns. And I think we've just moved away from like that human element, that art of teaching so much. And I think, and the pandemic really hurt that, because where our schools were really communal before, with social media, with the pandemic, and with everything that kind of pushed us further apart, I don't think we fully got that back. I think we're like, we got some of it back, but I don't think we really went back to the time where our schools were really these, you know, vibrant places. And so how do we get that back? Plus understanding that a lot of our teachers, their first couple of years in teaching were pandemic years.
So
they've never even led a, you know,
normal classroom
concept, right? And our babies don't even, you know, our like third and fourth graders don't even have a concept of what that looks like. So we have so much unlearning to do and so much undoing to do. And it's on our teachers. And I'm a big believer that every teacher can disrupt in their classroom and push back. But then, you know, just so everybody knows, I call out everybody from top to bottom, because I want to see a day where like having a joyful and inclusive classroom is a standard and you're getting support to do that, not just like, you know, just looking at the data or the objectives on the board, or that your kids are sitting quietly like little, you know, like little robots.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, and I think about education, and it's like, to your point, we're trying to fit people and kids into these molds in order to accomplish something, but we're not accomplishing what we're seeking to accomplish. So it's not working.
Right.
And we
Right, it
have,
hasn't been.
no, it hasn't been. And we have teachers leaving the classroom left and right because of this system. And it's like, it's got to change. So let's start it.
Right. Sometimes when I get pushed back, people will be like, well, how do you know like this is gonna work? And I'm like, babes, what you're doing right now isn't working.
It's
Like,
not working,
at least,
correct.
right. At least I'm giving you a different idea. Like, it's not like what you're doing right now is going so well either.
Right,
So I
yeah.
kind of push back on that because it really, if we think back for people who started teaching before the pandemic, it wasn't working then either. So some of
Yeah.
it is new to the pandemic, but I try to like not get caught up in this learning loss conversation
Agreed.
because we were very much not doing super well previously.
Before,
Like, right,
correct. Yeah.
exactly.
Now we just have a
Exactly.
place to quote unquote blame it on, you know, and it's like,
Right.
no, that's not the issue, I
Right.
don't think.
Exactly.
Oh, I love it. Okay, so let's kind of get into the nitty-gritty of trying to
Yeah.
root ourselves in our classrooms in joy. So, how would you define like what a classroom or a teacher actually looks like that's rooted in joy?
Right. I think that I like to break it down into like four categories. And I always say this in the context of culturally responsive teaching. And for like folks who aren't familiar, like a lot of my work starts and ends still with like culturally responsive teaching and anti-racist teaching, because I think joy is one of the asset pedagogies. And I think they all really lean on each other. And I always say when talking about culturally responsive teaching is a classroom is only as culturally responsive as the teacher teaching it, leading it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same with joy. I mean,
Sure.
sometimes I get teachers that they'll be like, well, what activities can I do? Like, can I throw in a go noodle? And sometimes it's like, yeah, throw in the activities, but also like, are you joyful? Do you
Yeah.
enjoy teaching? Are you, how are you? Are you feeling good? Are you coming to school with your mental health and your bucket filled in a way that lets you show up and support that? Because once you are a joyful person or you find the joy in the struggle, in the like back and forth with the students, in those tough moments, like in the I don't get it, I don't get it, I don't get it over and over again that you'll get from students. Like, you got to find the joy in that first, because I could give you a thousand little activities and cutesy things to do, but if your heart isn't in it, it's not going to translate. So this work always begins and ends with the teacher. And that really looks like, I know that we're all like self-cared out to death, but thinking of what it means to be whole and healthy as a person, and whether that means, you need a personal therapist, or you need to have a strong morning routine or a nighttime routine, just like caring on yourself, so that you can be joyful and getting what you need outside of school. Because you just can't compartmentalize. Like, a lot of the
No.
people that
Yeah.
have the hardest time, they're having a hard time outside of school too. I mean, there's
Sure.
definitely a correlation. So I think really starting with that is critical.
Absolutely. I love that. Very good. And then so teacher work first, and then what is a classroom that's rooted in joy? What if I walked in, let's say I'm the principal, what would I be seeing?
Yeah, I really focus on community over control. And what that means is that, like, everything is done with the aim of creating a healthy and vibrant community where people feel good and they have fun together. So, some things that I think about is it's probably not going to be as quiet as you're thinking. It's probably not going to be quiet. It's going to look like a lot of student discourse, not just back and forth from the teacher, not just that Q&A of like, Sally, what is this one? Okay, Billy, your turn, right? But really, kids dialoguing and discoursing with each other. It's probably going to look like table groups or pods, not rows. It's probably going to look like, I love centers and other ways of like breaking up the classroom into chunks. It's going to look like engaging a lot of project-based learning. It's going to look colorful, like the walls are going to be colorful. It's going to look like kids taking, ownership of that community. And it's so much easier to build a healthy classroom community when kids are invested in it. So I like, especially with my younger grade teachers, they use things like PeacePath or peer moderation to make sure that like kids are not like the teacher isn't the only person responsible for keeping the community healthy. Each individual student has a vested interest in keeping the community healthy. So it's going to look like kids, having those dialogues with each other. It's going to look like lots of visual reminders about emotional regulation, because I know that is a huge challenge. So it's going to look like, the four breaths worksheet on the wall, and like an image of, somebody in a field about mindfulness. Like, it's going to look like a lot of just reinforcement to monitor yourself. It's going to look like a lot of collaboration, and it's going to look like folks that are truly invested, and I mean every student. Because sometimes what happens, and this is what I'm experiencing with some of the teachers that I'm coaching right now, they have a few students that are not part of the community. And they're like, but everything else is good. And it's like, if you have a few students that aren't part of the community, those couple of students can, they're isolated, and they can be the ones that cause the most problems in the community. They're the ones that are turning up the most, because they're like, I'm not part of this. Like, great. Like,
I'm on my own island here.
exactly, I'm on an island, so I'm just gonna go kamikaze. So I really talk about, like, literally every student is included, and it's all of us or none. And so that is, and I understand that that sounds aspirational for a lot of teachers. They're like, whoa, Deanna, where do I even start? And so that's a North Star and a goal. But once you break it down and you recognize, like, how can I start this in just one subject? How can I start this just one day a week? And you start to piece it, you will build your capacity. And because it's natural for kids to be in community with each other, they're going to go along with it. It's going to be a lot easier than trying to force them into, like, something with compliance, because it feels good. Like, who doesn't want to be in that community, right? So it is very doable.
Well, and that's a great point because they're social beings,
Right.
And so much of what we do in education takes them away from that. And I'm like, as an adult, we need them to socialize. Let's prep them for that.
Right. I mean, if I, so teachers, if they sit in a PD for, let's say, like, more than 20, 30 minutes of just listening, they're ready to riot. They're
Girl, I'm
like,
having five conversations over here, you know? It's
right. But I think a lot of us are not aware that of how much we talk, of how little. So there's all kinds of little reflective exercises that I invite people to do. One is follow a student. Like, just if you're able to get a sub, especially if you're a leader, follow a student for a day. See how often they're talking to others, how many people call them by their name, how many times they look like they feel welcomed and embraced and they feel good. Like, follow a student for a day, especially middle school. And then count the minutes. Like, actually add up, how many minutes am I talking? How many minutes are they talking back to me? And how many minutes are they talking to each other? And I guarantee you'll see something that will, give you pause to think about, how can I improve that? Because we don't recognize, but we really have a lot of power just in our own classrooms to create this environment. And the best part is, when you start doing this, the academics come naturally. Like, so sometimes people are like, well, if I have this joyful community, then what about the test scores? I'm like, the test scores are going to go along with it, because they're going to feel good about being in school. You're going to spend less time managing, more time learning. So it's really, really, I think it's really easy. It's not easy, but it's very accessible. If you want to do it, it is very doable. And I've seen teachers, with difficult classes, no experience, all the barriers, whatever. I've seen them of all walks be able to implement some of this stuff.
Well, when the students want to be there, how much easier it is for them to retain and grasp them. I mean, yeah, that's
Right.
true as an adult. When I don't want to do something, am I doing it well? No.
Right. Exactly. Like, think about people who, like, love their jobs versus people who don't.
Exactly.
Same thing.
It seems simple, but I this community building piece is so big because I think we are intentional about it maybe at the beginning of the year as teachers. It's like the getting to know you and the icebreakers, which I hate that phrase and the whole idea of it, but usually teachers are very intentional at the beginning of the year. But what I'm hearing from you is we really have to make the community an intentional part of actually the art of teaching. You used that phrase earlier and I like it. And then also just the day-to-day like environment of our classroom, for lack of a better term.
Right. Yes, absolutely. I mean, and we do this, and then some people don't even get to the full week of community building. They're like, okay, day one and two, and then, like, the community is built. Like, wrap it up, you know? Right. And so I invite people to think about your relationships, right? If you have a friend, is the friendship just there, or do you have to, like, text them, hang out every once in a while, call
Yes.
them, do things together. Like if you have a partner, is it just like, okay, the partnership is there, or do you go on dates? Do you spend time together? Do you continue to build? So it's the same thing in your classroom. It's not a bank, you know, that you just kind of like make the deposit and then it's there. And so I like to think about breaking it down daily, weekly, monthly, yearly,
Cool.
and things that you're doing, you know, incrementally to continue to build the community, and recognizing that it doesn't always, you know, have to be like a beginning of the year icebreaker.
Yes.
But the community will be built as, you know, they'll take it over and build it themselves when they're in community with each other, when the kids are able to interact. And I think that a lot of teachers would be surprised how infrequently kids actually interact with each other in class, because a lot of it ends up being I do, you watch, you know, you do on your own, you do with a partner. And then that's it. That's the whole, you know,
That's
that's the
it.
whole pedagogical approach. And so I think when you think about giving them those little opportunities, whether it's a closeout, an opening meeting and a closeout meeting at the end of the week, whether it's like 5 minutes of transition time between the classes, if you're in the middle school context, whether it's, you know, just like giving them an opportunity to do something silly, like who has the meme of the week or like the TikTok of the week, or, you know, just banking some time to be silly together or watch a movie trailer or something's coming out. I mean, the options are endless, but it is like neuroscience tells us that when we laugh together, our brain actually rewires us to feel close to that person. So if you think about somebody that you really like, you probably laugh with them. You know, you guys probably have a good time, right? You crack up a little bit. And it's because when you laugh with somebody, your brain is telling you, like, oh, yeah, like that's my person. And so and that's like a scientific fact, right? So think about creating that with your classroom, like laughing with your kids, not just them, you know, laughing at you, but laughing with your kids and building those moments. It's a great way to build community and build that connection, especially in the middle school context.
Love that. That's such a cool scientific fact you shared. So laugh more, people. That's
Yes,
the
laugh
message
more.
here.
Yeah, basically
Love
laugh more.
that. And you kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but I wonder how you would recommend for teachers having kind of a balance between, because and that's this problem with education is we think about learning being in this structured environment, and there does have to be an organization to the classroom and that kind of thing.
For sure.
But how do you kind of balance that with this joy piece, this flexibility, the spontaneity that you're kind of talking about?
Yeah, I think it is so, you know, one thing that I talk about in the book is just because you have a joyful classroom does not mean you have structure. And we have to like let go of this idea that joy always means loosey-goosey. What joy means is that like it's flexible, and within the structure there's space to be a human being. Like there's the structure doesn't exist to, you know, just to exist. It exists to support the actual people. And so everything that you do should be with the aim of like, you know, helping your students as they are little human beings. And so I think that as long as you are, you know, maintaining the understanding that like there needs to be support and structure for them to be in community with each other, because that's one challenge that some folks face, right? They are so worried about joy and they're not sure how to do it. So then they feel like, okay, well, we can't have any norms or rules. And that's not the case, because I can't be joyful if somebody else is allowed to, you know, make racist comments or is dancing on the table unsafely. Like, I'm not joyful in that space. And so it is definitely, it doesn't mean that there's no structure. It doesn't mean that there's no community agreements. It just means that like it's a community agreement. It means that those structures exist because they support us. It means that we talk about it. It means that there's a why. You know, these middle school kids, they love drive you crazy with asking
With their
like,
why
but
questions.
miss, why? But miss, da, 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 right? And so we have reasons, we have, you know, flexibility, we have opportunities for them to feel engaged. And that is so important, that autonomy. Because think about how we feel as teachers when we don't have autonomy. We, you know, we're ready to strike when we don't have a say over what's being taught. Kids have no say over what they're learning. Zero.
There's there.
So, right, they're just there and they don't even get paid. So, we really have to think about bringing in that autonomy, that flexibility, but that doesn't mean that you have to like throw away everything you ever learned about running a classroom, because at the end of the day, like we're there to learn. And so striking that balance is critical, but I think most teachers worry too much about letting go. I think Like, I've seen very few classrooms that are, you know, too joyful. I've seen a lot of classrooms that are, you know, out of control because
Yes.
there's no community, but I haven't seen a teacher that goes overboard with joy yet. So if you're thinking like, oh, am I too joyful? You're probably not. Like, you're good. Stay where you are.
I love what you said about the structure being in place to support the community. Like the structure is there to really allow the community to happen. And that's cool. That's a really
I
profound
mean,
thought.
and they're kids, right? They're learning, they're testing boundaries. They pretty much exist to test boundaries at this point. And so it is still your responsibility to have those to help them understand and navigate that. But I think what we do too much, especially as middle school teachers, is we feel like we have to like run a tight ship. We feel like we have to like lock it down. And we have this like image that you know, if things get too out of whack, then we'll lose control or something like that. And I really just invite people to unpack where that deep need to control other beings comes from, and why not instead think about like building a community together where they are invested in creating that themselves, because they don't want to be in that situation either. But I think in our heads we think that like they want to be in this like violent, dangerous classroom. That's not the case. They just want to feel included. They just want to like, you know, they just want to be full people. And so I think especially as middle school, it's so important that we recognize and like not take ourselves too seriously. And like, you know, step back a little bit and say like, hey, how can I build in joy and engage students in what that looks like? Like, ask them. I want, hey guys,
That's
I want to do
great.
something fun, but I want us to be safe. Y'all got any ideas? Like, help me out, right? So engage them too.
Well, they love that. I kind of reflect back. When I taught eighth grade English, I had one novel unit that I wanted to teach, but I couldn't decide what I wanted to teach. And I asked them. I was like, "Here's our options. Let's vote." And they chose Romeo and Juliet of all things, but then they were like so invested in it. And I'm like, "We're reading Shakespeare," and they like it. So I love that. I love that idea of just like ask them because they're
Right. And
there.
they, and it, and even if they don't, even if they pick what you would have picked anyway, even if they don't all agree, just the experience of feeling like their ideas matter is transformative.
Absolutely. That's so cool. So one of the things I thought about, like when you were pre presenting at BPL, at EB, we're all about engagement, the fun, but also bringing rigorous, activities to classrooms. But I do know a lot of our teachers have these district mandated curriculums that, they are expected to teach to fidelity. And some of them feel, from what I hear, very dry and very stark. Do you have some ideas for how teachers could incorporate the joy element into those types of curricula that they have?
So, and I think I use this analogy in the session as well that we did, but I always think about like doctoring up a cake. And so I love to bake, and so I sometimes will get like a Betty Crocker or a Duncan Hines cake mix, but then put my own little spin on it, add a little razzle dazzle. And so I think that's what I think of when I think of using a curriculum that you have to use, because I've been in that position too, where either something is not, it's not relevant, like it's not current, it's not updated, or it's not really grasping my students' interests. And so a couple of things I think about is one, you know, everything is a text. Like a tweet is a text, a video is a text, everything is a text. And so when you have a text that you have to use, you can just put it in conversation with other things, with other ideas, open up opportunities to compare and contrast. I've also had students like look at it through a critical lens and then give me feedback on the text. Like, hey, we have to use this. I want y'all to tell me like where are all the ways that this falls short,
Oh, I love
right? And
that.
then they're like actively engaging in like, okay, well, you know, there's no characters of color, or this is, you know, this is problematic for whatever reason, right? And so that could be fun for students. I think another thing that you can do is just breaking up the method, like how it's delivered. Sometimes like it's just dry, and so you gotta do a Kahoot, do a circle time, do a jigsaw, do, you know, have them rewrite Shakespeare, but it has to be in TikTok language. Have them, you know, act it out. Just you can, if you have to use the material as is, think about, is there a modality that you can engaged, it's a little bit more fun and interesting. And then, also like bringing in the students, asking them to vote, asking for their opinions, asking for their perspectives, is always great. And then I just try to bring in whatever I can to create analogies or to help them find something that's similar that is relevant. So especially if you're doing like a novel study, okay, well, this is, the lovers to friends trope or whatever. Do you see that anything else? Like, what's a movie? What's a TV show that you've seen it in? Or if, there is, we're talking about something having to do with grammar, or maybe it's looking to find how grammar has shifted or learning about different syntax or ebonics. I mean, there's so many ways to make it interesting and fun. But I think at the end of the day, like the biggest piece is you coming into it. Because if you come into it and you're like, oh, we're doing Catch in the Rye and we just got to get through it. It's dry. It's the same Catch in the Rye that we've done several
Always.
times. Right. Always the thing. I think my mom read that in school, and here I
Yes.
am teaching it. It is what it is. If you come in with that, yeah, bring some levity to it. But if you are a joyful and creative person, if you are a spontaneous person, if you know your kids, and if you are not so focused on outcomes, but the process, you will find they will reveal themselves to you. Moments will like funny moments or opportunities will be there. And it's just, are you courageous enough to stick with them? Or are you going to let that clock, be on your back and sweat you until the point where you're just skipping over all of these really good, juicy opportunities just for the sole purpose of getting it done? And so I think that is something like a mindset. And I know I say this as somebody who's not going to get in trouble for doing it, but I invite you to be a little, to push back a little bit and do that, because it's the anything can be interesting and engaging, but it's just the time limit that we put on ourselves. And so then it feels impossible because it's like, can I be interesting in 60 minutes? Like, I don't think
But you
so.
can, but you
Right. So,
can.
right. So just thinking about it from that perspective.
Well, and the all of the ideas you just gave, which I encourage everybody to go back because like everything you just said was incredible. But as you were listing them off, those were all ways of also getting kids to use like those higher order thinking skills. So yes, they're learning, right? And
Yes,
so,
yes.
if I had somebody pushing back at me because I was using those skills, I would kind of just fight back that these are good teaching practices. This
Right,
is just good teaching. And because sometimes I do think right now in education, we get a little caught up in like the newest curricula or the newest strategy, and we forget about what good teaching looks like. And so I encourage our listeners to listen to what you just said and do it because that's good teaching.
Well, and what I always encourage people to think about is a meme is an analogy, right? Like there's that it's in these are if you go with Bloom's, right? The higher level things, the making connections, the analogizing, all of that is very much you can see that on TikTok. Like that's where kids
Absolutely.
are, right? And so a lot of times I'll like tell them like find a TikToker that talks about this or like find a meme or like create a meme because all of those things are using the text that they are most comfortable with. If someone is listening thinking, we need them to write essays, yes. But sometimes you have to recognize where your entry point is. And if your entry point is a TikTok video essay and then it turns into something else, I think that we have to be okay with that and understand that like that doesn't mean that they're only learning through social media. Social media is a mechanism, is a way of getting to that text. So I encourage folks to like think about it like that and engage with it with an open mind because and especially just the kids even just seeing you having an open mind about those things goes so far to
Oh my
them.
gosh. Yes. They
Because
would
to them,
respect you
they
so
think,
much.
right, they think this is their culture. Okay. They are like, this is me. I like, this is so important to me. They really think that that is, the end all and be all. So to hear them out on that, I think is really powerful.
Oh, fantastic. Another piece of that community building, which is so great. Yeah,
Right,
cool.
right.
Good stuff. Well, as we're kind of wrapping up, I would love it if you could just leave teachers, and it's gonna be hard, leave teachers with one thing that they could do today to bring back the joy in their classroom. What would you suggest that one thing be?
Yeah, I would say one thing that you can do today to bring back the joy in the classroom is to I'm gonna sound like a district person, but to start with the data, right? Just to look and see where you're at. Because I think, we don't know what our goal is and what our North Star is until you know where you're at. Like, just stop and think, like, when is the last time you felt joyful in your classroom? Ask the students, when did they feel joy? Ask the students, do they feel like they belong? Look at, just take an inventory of your regular day. How much time do the students do? Like I always say, it's soccer, not tennis. Are they playing soccer, bouncing the ball off of each other, or is it just tennis back and forth? Look at how many times your kids are talking about something non-academic, right? So just thinking about like where you're at and actually knowing the numbers is so illuminating because again, we think that we're doing probably more than we are, especially if you're multiple subject or if you're a singular subject, because then all the classes start to mix together
Oh
and
my
you're like,
goodness.
oh yeah, I did this with four period, but like I totally forgot about six period or like this is over here. So take inventory is the first step and then just start with one day of the week. Like maybe Thursday is your day where you're going to focus on including an activity that's a little, a little bit of a razzle dazzle activity, something to zhuzh it up and start slow that way. And then if you're somebody that feels like the activities are really solid, but you're struggling with relationships, I always recommend the 2 by 10, which is having a 2 minute conversation that's non-academic with a student for 10 days in a row and just watching kind of that relationship build. Just take 2 minutes out of your day to talk about something positive, non-academic, and just watch how that can really transform your relationship. So those were two, kind of three options I
That's
wanted to
great.
give folks what to start with. Yeah.
I love those. I mean, there's just so many like nuggets of gold in this episode. This is fantastic, Deanna. You're a gem. So thank
Thank
you so
you.
much for
Thank you
being
so
here.
much.
I've loved this. Yes. I would love for you to just share with our listeners where they can find you, all of the things.
Yeah. So definitely come hang out on Instagram. I post, like, try to post daily strategies, tips, just ideas. And I really wanted to create, it's almost like a virtual PLC, without like all of the, nonsense that goes along with the PLC, but kind of like a fun space for us to continue to share ideas. And so follow me there. I do this work with schools and leaders, which is, it's always exciting when I'm able to work with the whole staff or like even with the whole district. And so, I have like several workshops and series that I do in person and virtually. So if that's something that you think your school could benefit from, or you would like to do personally, because I do offer individual coaching as well, please reach out to me. Like I said, everything is there on my Instagram. It's just my name at Deanna Smith. And then of course a great entry point is just picking up a copy of Rooted in Joy. Like I said, it's Amazon, Target, it's at Mahogany Books if you'd like to support a Black-owned business, and they ship across the US. And so yeah, that would be a great place to start. And if you join me over on Instagram, send me a DM so I know you're part of the community, and I'd love to, support and help, because it really, like, this stuff is my passion. It brings me joy. So I just love talking about it. I could talk about it all day. So come along and join the conversation.
Well, I love that you love talking about it because this has just been so valuable for teachers, and what you're doing is amazing, Deanna. Thank you for doing the work you
Yes, thank you so
do.
much for having me. It was great, and I really appreciate when platforms like yours recognize the value and give me an opportunity to chat with your people. So I'm
Oh,
excited.
absolutely. Anytime. We'll have to have you back at some time too.
Yes, of course.
Yes. Well, thanks everybody for listening, and please join us again next week on the Teaching Middle School ELA podcast. Bye for now, everybody.
Thanks, y'all.